I'm so excited to start this series here on Arena Sportsnet through my site, allabouttherace.com, to introduce people to new people and racing, try to introduce new fans as well, because there's so many different people that a lot of times aren't talked about on your main media outlets. Now, this guy is actually starting to get a lot more exposure. He's a mentor of mine, a friend of mine, someone I respect highly. He's one of the good guys. He actually gave me my start in racing. He is a perennially leading trainer at Oaklawn Park and trains arguably the top sprinter in the country right now in Whitmore, Ron Mouquette. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Are you on your way to Baltimore now? Are you there?
No, I just got here. Been here, got here last night.
Fantastic. And when did you ship in your horses?
I sent the horses up 3 days ago on the airplane.
Okay, and how have they been training at Pimlico?
Very well. Laura gets on them all, as you know, and she says everybody is happy and healthy.
Awesome. I'm so glad that she's there with you too. So just a little bit about your background. You come from really humble beginnings there, from Fort Smith, Arkansas. You didn't come from a racing family. You really had to work your way from the ground up. I know at one point you lived in a tack room, and you came up under Bernie Flint. Who else did you come up under?
That was pretty much it as far as thoroughbreds. I used to work for a quarter horse farm near my home, in Oklahoma, on the border of Arkansas and Oklahoma. But as far as thoroughbred goes, it was straight to Bernie, and then got my own horse, bought my first thoroughbred racehorse off of Lucas, D. Wayne Lucas, and it was a horse that he and his wife at the time had bred, named Rare Money. So that's how I come up in thoroughbreds, but it the base of it started in quarter horses.
Okay, and your first starter was a 97, right?
Thoroughbred, yeah.
Yeah.
My first win was a quarter horse Appaloosa named Sparkling Bull.
Oh, how cool. Well, you fast forward 20 years now, and especially in these last 5 years, I've really seen your career, your business take off. You're eclipsing $1 million, $2 million in yearly earnings. You've had Breeders' Cup starters. You're a multiple graded stakes winning trainer. You actually got your first Kentucky Derby starter with Far Right in 2015. You followed that up in last year with Whitmore, and now you almost had Petroff, who made it in this year as well. And you actually finished second overall in the trainer standings at Oaklawn this winter, only behind Steve Asmussen, which is so impressive and I'm sure really exciting for you since Oaklawn is your home track. What does that type of success mean to you, and what do you attribute it to?
Well, the thing that drives me as a racing trainer is the fact that I'm still a racing fan. And anytime you get to go up against the quality of trainers and horses that I get to run against, you spoke of Far Right. We got beaten in the Arkansas Derby. We ran second, but we got beat by American Pharoah. And we finished second in Money Earned at Oaklawn Park, but we got beat by Steve Asmussen. So the kind of people that we get to compete against now and things for me being a fan is huge. I love the fact that we're trying to get on the stage and we're running respectful for our horses and our clients and our barn. And that's a huge thing that I hope I never outgrow, is the fact that I'm still a little bit in awe of these guys as I'm trying to beat them.
And one thing that I think that also could be a factor, I know is a factor to your success, is your motto, horses first, and you've got the sign that hangs up in your office to prove so. And that's one thing I love about your operation is you truly do put the horse first.
Yeah, the horse has always been the thing. It can be around a horse a little bit, you'll know why you should love them and why you should respect them and why you should put them first. And a lot of times people lose sight of the reason we do all this. But the reason for our barn is always is going to be under the mantra, horses first. We do what's right by the horse, and he'll take care or she'll take care of us.
Absolutely. And speaking of someone who's not really gotten too big, and you say you run against the Asmussens and the Baffords and the Lucases, but you have always been someone who has given shots to new people getting into racing. I know you gave me my shot. Not just there in your shed row, though, also riders. I want to talk a little bit about your relationship with Ricardo Santana Jr. He obviously is going to have the call for you on Our Majesty today and then Whitmore tomorrow. How has that relationship developed for you over the years?
Well, he was a 15-year-old Panamanian that basically wandered in my barn and told me he was going to be a good rider and asked me if I had any jobs for him to do. And he had not taken out his bug license in the United States yet, and he kept telling me how good he was and in broken English. But we let him hold horses in the ice tub, and we let him graze horses and walk horses. And the fact that he was willing to do all that and show that he A, liked horses, and B, loved the sport enough to do whatever was asked was always a key thing in me evaluating his want, you know. And the difference a lot of times with these riders is from the eighth pole home, who wants it more. And he's a great kid. He deserves all the success he's having. I'm very proud that he started around us, and I'm glad that whatever effect we've had, or I like to think he's mutually affected us.
Absolutely. Well, he's got a pretty big job for you this weekend with Whitmore, and also today riding Our Majesty. You're sending her out in the Grade 3 Miss Preakness Stakes. That's a 6-furlong sprint for 3-year-old fillies on the dirt. She's the 7-2 morning line favorite. Does Ricardo get on her in the mornings to work her?
No, he doesn't. And the reason why is I've got horses that he has, mm-hmm. and I continue that. But, you know, I'm so superstitious. I like everything to go the way it was that made us be successful. And Jose is a boy that gets on her and works her and breezes her and gallops her. And Kaylee is the main gallop person for her. So I'm in the if it's not broke, don't fix it category.
Absolutely.
So we just leave it the same way. And he gets on her in races and we look forward to her, you know, getting a good trip and representing the cool ownership that owns her very well.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask you about that. I know Onicides Chinello. Am I pronouncing that right? I'm not Italian.
Yeah.
Is that right? I know she's involved, but you've got some of your other owners, female owners, who have gotten involved in that partnership, correct?
Yeah, Catherine Adams Hutt, who's a partner with me on Petrov and Treble and many other horses, and then Ella Lou Smith, which owned Bim Bam,
yeah.
And Edna Edick, which has been her husband's been an owner in my barn for the past 20 years, and you know, all these people, along with Anna and obviously Bonnie Hamilton of Silverton Hills, owns that filly, and it's quite the group of very, very good horsewomen. There's every one of them, you know, have ridden. Every one of them understand the game, and you know, it's not just you know, somebody that wants to own a horse and they're financially able to do so. It's a group of ladies that enjoy racing but really appreciate horses.
Absolutely. This filly you purchased at OBS, right?
Yes, we purchased her at the OBS sale. She had failed to meet the reserve set, and we went and bartered a little bit after that. And luckily, the consigner herself is a girl wanted us to have her, and it's worked out very well.
OBS, for people who don't know, is the Ocala Breeders Sale down in Florida. Now, when you purchased Our Majesty, was that specifically for It's All About the Girl Stable?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that was. They told me to find a nice filly that would be fun and that we could develop into a good horse. And I'm proud of trying to get the good deals. I know you can go over and outspend everybody if you put all your money together or whatever. To me, there's going to be times when you have to do that, but I don't think it's every time.
Right.
You can go over there and try to get a, you know, luckily Whitmore cost $37,000, and we know what Bar Right cost, and
yeah,
and you know all those guys. So she was a decent deal, and by a sire that hadn't taken off quite like it like he has now, and a good older dam, and you know, I found her over there, you know, kicking the bushes, and she was, it wasn't like she was hidden. She was a fast filly. Anybody could see her, but I'm very happy we got her.
Well, she's run very well for you. If it looks like, if you just look at her finishes, that she's undefeated, but she was actually disqualified there, and her second start at Oakland in March. What happened there?
It was a, you know, very tricky call. I'd say more, if you lined up 100 people that saw it, you know, probably 85 of them would think you were crazy if you told them that you were disqualified.
Yeah.
And but three of those 15 were in the steward seats that day. So
yeah,
it wasn't a very popular decision among racing fans, but she come back and vindicated herself well in her next out against some good horses. And, you know, you can grow from that, or you can allow that to haunt you. And we've decided to just move on and try to go on and grow from it.
Well, I don't think that she knew that she was taken down, because she went out last time and won easily there at Keeneland. Now you're taking her into graded company today. Any reservations there, or do you think she's ready?
She's ready. I was surprised to see the field size quite like it was, and there's a lot of really nice horses. People like to be on the main stage, and
yeah,
it was between this race and the Eight Bells, and I knew that the weather coming was was something that I really didn't want to contend with over a traditionally demanding surface on Oaks and Derby Day. I've noticed that I do my homework, and I noticed that three and, you know, a lot of the fillies that come out of the Eight Bells usually don't go on and become as successful as you think they should be. So I decided with that in the slop, we were pointing to the race that we're in today, and it looks like there was about 15 others that thought the same thing.
Yeah, that was pretty smart, even if it was just based on weather alone, because it seems like you're going to get perfect weather this weekend. So that's definitely
awesome.
Good. Going later on in the card, in race 11, you send out Torrent in the Grade 2 Black Eyed Susan, which is a race for three-year-old fillies going a mile and an eighth on the dirt. Now, Torrent is actually the co-long shot at 15-1 morning line odds. You're stepping her up in class a little bit today. You're stretching her out to the mile and an eighth. Why did you choose this spot for her?
Yeah, we pointed to this spot immediately after the fantasy.
Okay.
And we had a probably a disadvantageous trip. We were wide throughout the whole race, and she still kept coming. And even, you know, on a day that the inside speed was holding so well and had somewhat of a bias, she still performed well against all that. So I was very, very optimistic that if we could get her to the Black Eyed Susan as happy and moving forward as she was in the fantasy, that she may have a shot to go up there and do well. So we think if we get a good trip, we're going to be competitive. We're obviously experienced in large fields,
yes,
and experienced with difficult trips, and we have talent. So I think the next question is how do we do today? And it'd be nice to, you know, a nice feather in the cap of the owners and breeders, which is West Rock Stables, to run 1, 2, 3 in such a cool race.
West Rock Stables, they are the coffee people, right?
Yeah, they are the coffee people, and they are from Arkansas. They
awesome.
Actually, a couple of my owners, Alex Lieblong and Joe Ford, actually grew up less than a couple blocks from each other there in Conway, Arkansas. So it's all a close-knit group.
So going back to her running style, you know, she's drawn outside again today. She's in the 8 hole out of 11 horses. And like you said, she was carried 7 wide, running line set at the quarter pole, so going into the stretch. And she did finish really well, all things considered. Now, with Pimlico being a track that's more known for its tight turns, how does that affect your strategy, or does it affect your strategy at all?
Well, I'm going to, you know, go over, and I tell everybody, I set my trips when I named the riders. You know,
uh-huh.
I I will, obviously, I'll go up and say to a rider, hey, she does this or she prefers this or whatever. But from that point on, you know, we're lucky to have Jose Ortiz on a good, sound, fast filly. From that, I'm just going to let him kind of take his knowledge that he has of the track and the success he's had as a rider and just allow him to give us the best opportunity to win.
Well, I think you've definitely got a good shot, you know, especially with him in the irons. He's the second leading jockey in the country right now. You can't go wrong there. So let's go on now to Saturday. You got your big boy, Whitmore, who is in the Grade 3 Maryland Sprint. That is a 6-furlong race for 3-year-olds and up on the dirt. Of course, you are not the favorite here, though. You've got a horse named AP Indian, and not really by much. He's 8-5 morning line odds, and you're 9-5. You're coming in here, and the reason he's so highly favored is he's undefeated this year. He's 5-5 at the 6-furlong distance. Now, before we get into all the nuts and bolts with him, Whitmore was named for a friend of yours, right?
Yeah, a guy I went to high school with and played basketball with, Wilbur Whitmore. When I bought this horse, I thought he was just a really easy athlete. He's kind of, you know, he's a big guy, you know, bulky, but he moves very graceful, and that's what Whitmore was. So I called him and told him I was going to name a horse after him whenever he was two, and said, you know, you're probably going to be in the Derby. He started laughing. He said, like, yeah, okay, cool. So, and then when he was, I was actually lucky enough to have the human Whitmore come and accompany us to the Derby. So that was pretty cool.
Well, yeah, and not only did he get to go to the Derby, now he's could possibly see himself in the Breeders' Cup this year. I mean, you picked a good horse to name after your friend. Is he going to be there today or tomorrow, I should say?
No. He will. I will try to get him to California if everything goes smooth and we make it to the Breeders' Cup. I will bring him there. But I don't think, unless he surprised me, I don't think he's coming to Baltimore.
Okay. All right. Now, Whitmore, he works really well. I mean, he's an honest horse. It's not like he works slowly, but he really stepped up May 14th, his last work, with a bullet. He went 46-2. Was that a planned fast work for him?
No, it wasn't. But at the same time, you guys, you know, this is where it pays to be at the track every morning. That day, we worked the first set, which the first set, if you work the same amount of energy and everything for the second set, is usually about 3 seconds or 3/5 of a second faster, mm-hmm. just because the track is tighter and it's not chopped up from somebody else had working over it. And we're always the first set. But that coupled with, there was the first race of that day that we worked was a non-winners of 2 for 50 claiming that was won with a 107.3 clocking.
Yeah.
So the track was obviously faster and maybe more so than people will give credit to. So that work was really like a 47-4. But the effort of which he did it, or the way he did it, and the effort that he used to do it was pretty remarkable.
Yeah. So with that work in mind, that didn't take much out of him though, right? I mean, he's still kicking the barn down, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, that's the reason we're here instead of waiting on the True North.
Yeah.
He'd come out of that work so smooth and impressive, and it really didn't do anything to make him easier to manage around the barn. So I decided we'd better ease up to the next item on the board, which was with this race. We wasn't 100% sure who was going. It just worked out as timing, and you know, AP Indian and Holy Boss and all those horses are very good horses, and it's going to take us to have a good race and a good trip to beat those kind of guys.
With AP Indian to your inside, who, you know, can set a little bit off the pace, much like Whitmore, and then some really early speed and Holy Boss right to your outside, how do you want to see the race unfold ideally?
We're very versatile, so I'm just going to tell Ricardo, he knows the horse, put him in a position. As of now, we have confidence that he can win from coming from off the pace, or if he has to be a little bit closer. So what I want him to, you know, to understand is that you run against very classy horses,
right?
And you know, make sure you're in a position to do what you're asking the horse to do, and that's all. Just feel confident in your ride, and then and then, you know, put him in position to do what you need him to do.
You own part of Whitmore with your Southern Spring Stables with Bob LaPenta. Is there anyone else?
Yes, Saul Kuhman just purchased a portion of it before the last race.
So, okay.
He was able to be a part of that nice win, and we're happy to have Saul in the barn. He's a very, very good owner that, like Bob, is very invested, and we're happy to have him in our barn.
Are you running in his silks today?
It's his turn, yes.
Okay.
We'll tomorrow. Go to his silks this time, and then we'll go the next race will be Bob LaPenta's silks, and then we go back to Southern Springs. So it works out great, because the East Coast guys that live on the East Coast get their silks in their backyard, and I was able to have my silks in my backyard at Oaklawn.
Very cool, very cool. Well, here are a few of the fan questions that I got, and they're obviously all going to be about Whitmore, and probably, as you can imagine, they're going to pertain to him switching in distances. The first question comes from Ryan Dickey, and he wants to know, was it obvious during Whitmore's Derby preps that he was a runner who would be better suited to sprint, and do you think that Derby fever was part of the reason that he did go on to partake in the Derby Trail and ultimately run in the Kentucky Derby?
Well, that's a good question. I can tell you this, that he is a horse that has the dosage to go as far, if you ask Steve Haskin, to go as far as any horse that's ever won the Derby. So to be 100% honest, he was a horse that never once said he didn't like going the distance. Very few horses, including you know, the horse that finished second in this year's Kentucky Derby, had his consistent run getting to the Kentucky Derby as Whitmore did.
Mm-hmm.
He finished third in the Arkansas Derby, where he got beat or got kind of bumped at the head of the stretch by the eventual winner. We finished second in the Rebel. He was very consistent going around, and he actually made $450,000 and was only out of the top three one time going two turns. So we still know that he's a very nice horse.
Yeah.
Going two turns and further distance, but if this distance, he does it so much easier.
Right.
So it's kind of like, I think he favors this distance because it's so easy on him. But until we run against AP Indian tomorrow and start running against the better horses, you got to remember, as a 3-year-old, he tackled the best there was.
Yeah.
At the longer distances, and we're just now starting to do that. We've yet to run in a grade one, where in a sprint race where he is grade one stakes placed in route races. So I think he's obviously a more fun and better sprinter, but
yeah.
Right now, if you told me I could get a horse that run 1, 2, 3 and made it to the Derby as fit and sound and happy as he did, I would do it again.
So he is versatile. Like you said, he does have a dosage that does suggest that he can go long. Jenny Potter seems to think he could actually run really well at the mile distance. And she's like, obviously he has this race in hand today, she believes, or on Saturday, I should say. But she wants to know if you've considered stretching out back out to a mile and perhaps target the Met Mile.
I have considered it, and we still may. You know, I think that he's very versatile, and you know, I haven't ruled out any distance with him really, but I'm kind of staying under the 7/8 for this year if I can, just because I'm really going to try to focus on the Breeders' Cup sprint.
Mm-hmm.
And if the you got to remember too, the Met Mile's grade one.
Yeah.
And he's a gelding. It doesn't do anything for us for the ownership to win a grade one as much as it does getting to the Breeders' Cup and winning the sprint.
Right.
So I would, you know, I wouldn't mind. Obviously, we're not going to duck anybody. We're running a $150,000 race against, I think, one of the top sprinters in the world.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, we're doing it at a distance that he's won his last three outs at. And you know, so when we try that, I would prefer not to have to try it in a grade one against proven horses at that distance.
That makes sense. Final fan question from Michael Armstrong. He wants to know, do you change Whitmore's training regimen for the sprints he's running in this year versus the route races he ran in last year?
Yes, I do. I allow there to be a little more speed in the works, and I don't have to work as often with him. And this is different from other sprinters and other horses. You know, I think you train each horse individually, and, you know, you might have to a bigger, you know, more robust horse. You may have to work more to keep the weight where you want it, and to keep him fit. But this horse has got a natural punch.
Yeah, he really does.
Natural speed. So I just basically have to keep him happy, which I had to do going a route of ground, but I just don't have to do as much lengthier works.
Well, that is great to know on all accounts. Thank you so much for sharing about all of these horses and your background. One thing I do want to touch on, I'd be remiss not to bring up, is how great you are in taking care of your horses once they're finished at the track. And not just horses who are in your barn currently, but maybe horses who go on and are claimed by other trainers. I know I have reached out to you on a number of occasions to, you know, let you know about horses who may be in some dire situations, and you always step up for that. Is that a big priority for you? And are there any specific aftercare organizations that you are involved with?
We try to help all of them. I think they all have their own niche that they excel at. I really like the fact that thoroughbred horses can be used in so many different things after their careers are over as racehorses. From, you know, the pony that took Gunrunner to the post in Dubai was an ex racehorse that my wife made into a pony.
Oh, no way.
And he was able to take all those horses for Steve Asmussen. And then, you know, the horse Biker Boy is at the horse park, and he's teaching vets horsemanship.
Oh, so cool.
And those are the kind of things, and you want to help all of them, and you want to be in a position. So to do that, you can't really single out one group. There's a group of people in Oklahoma that just brought a horse to my attention that I sold to an outrider to be an outrider horse, and I guess it didn't work out for him, and he got rid of it. And they helped me find it and procure it, and now they're retraining it to be a dressage horse. And, you know, there's just so many different things that these guys can do, and they're so noble and they're so cool. I just want to make sure they have every opportunity to figure out what it is they want to do after their career of racing is over, which is only a small window of their life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I have one last segment. It'll be fast and easy. It's something I'm doing with all of my guests. It's just 10 questions, some to do with racing, some just to do with you. You ready?
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready.
What's your favorite type of wager?
Trifecta box.
Who is your favorite racehorse of all time?
Away.
Say that again?
Whirl Away.
Oh, Whirl Away. Okay. What is a race that's on your bucket list to win?
The Breeders' Cup Sprint.
I think you could do that this year. Where is your favorite vacation spot?
Yeah.
When was your last vacation?
We don't do vacations. Saratoga.
There you go. If you could pick one person from history, living or dead, to take to the races with you for an afternoon, who would that be?
My grandpa.
Oh. Who's your favorite sports team?
Arkansas Razorbacks.
If you weren't a trainer, what would you be doing?
Let's see here. I don't know. Let me think. It has to be something to do with animals.
Yeah.
I don't know. It has to be something to do with animals.
What's your favorite song?
Ooh. Okay. Now, you got to remember, I'm very diverse with music, so I've got everything from gangster rap to old school country. So I'm going to say right now it's probably Disturbed's version of what was the name of that song that I like so much of Disturbed's? They did it live on the Conan O'Brien show.
I didn't see that. I feel like they did do a cover.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's like a Simon and Garfunkel song.
It's a slower song.
Yeah. Probably my favorite song.
I can't think of the top of my head, but
that's crazy.
I'll Google it and put it in the notes.
Yeah, it's what's funny is I probably listen to it and the Mumford Sons about once a week, and it says.
Are you looking it up?
No, I know I'm trying to get to it, and I'm not about to sing it. So, but it starts off saying help. Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Sound of silence. Sound of silence. Yes. I Googled it. Okay.
There you go.
Do you think that we're going to have another Triple Crown winner this year with Always Dreaming?
Well, no, because I'm betting on Classic Empire for the race.
Okay.
So I can't really say that. I hope we do. I think the game's great when we do, but I think Classic Empire wins the Preakness if he gets a good trip.
All right, and finally, this is probably the most important question for anyone who works for you. What is your Subway sandwich order?
Oh, it's roast beef, and you got to pull the bread out because I don't like all that. I don't want a bread sandwich, so It's roast beef with American cheese.
And you're a cookie guy too, right? You like the cookies?
Yeah, cheesecake.
I do remember that.
The cheesecake cookie, yeah. Everybody has to know that because I stay at the barn usually and I send somebody. And it's funny it's funny how many different people can make the same sandwich differently.
Well, I think you're probably one of the people responsible for a Subway relocating closer to Churchill. You've got to be.
you can't tell by the amount they charge me. I think I should get a discount.
I know, right? Well, Ryan, I know you've got a lot to do today, and I really want to say thank you so much for taking your time to be with me today. You're my first interview for this new series on Arena Sportsnet for All About the Race, so it's great having you. I wish you all the best. And hopefully we can talk a little later this summer and we'll have some Breeders' Cup plans mapped out.
Sounds great to me.
All right, Ron, have a great weekend.